Jay Jaffe, senior writer, FanGraphs, because I want to talk about Aaron Boone. And, you know, I mean, there was a time, Jay, not so long ago, when Yankees fans, you know, looked at Aaron Boone in October and they'd get all misty-eyed because there was some fond memories of, well, one fond memory in particular of Aaron Boone in Pinstripes in October. Not the case now. I mean, he's getting pilloried by a lot of people. You criticized him as well and FanGraphs. I mean, you know, guys like Joel Sherman, Mark Feinstein, doing some reading, some of the national commentators as well have been all over him for his bullpen management and sort of seeming to go away from what he said he was going to do. Question I have for you, Jay, because it is New York, and the Yankees do tend to measure themselves by what happens in October. I'm not going to say he's going to lose his job over this because George Steinbrenner isn't running the team anymore.
Right.
But do we think less of Aaron Boone as a manager this morning because of what we saw in the postseason?
Well, we certainly saw gaps in his skills. Aaron Boone was hired to replace Joe Girardi, who was rightly or wrongly perceived as not being able to mesh well with the new generation of players that the Yankees were bringing up. And I think specifically a lot of that points to Gary Sanchez. But, you know, the Yankees wanted somebody who was maybe a little bit more malleable, in terms of working with the front office, working with the numbers they provided, and communicating, and were willing to hire a first-time manager, somebody who had never managed a day in the dugout at any level, and they went with Aaron Boone, and they won 100 games, 9 more than last year. Now, if you're going to choose a rookie manager, you're going to have to accept the fact that a rookie manager is going to make rookie mistakes. We've seen this elsewhere throughout the league, and that's something that the Yankees have to accept this morning, Aaron Boone, while he may be a great manager for 162 games, he was not a very good manager for the 4 games in this postseason. Although, you know, he did a perfectly credible job in the wild card game. It seemed to me like the game sped up on him in both early innings in both games 3 and 4. He had this fixation that, okay, I need to get my starter through the lineup a second time, and then I will go to my guy, to the bullpen, instead of saying, hey, this plan isn't working. I'm going to need an extra right-hander to get out of a jam in order to keep this closer, and we're not going to be able to get all the way through the order the second time. And literally that's what happened both games. And I think it's unfortunate, but there was a rigidity there that seemed very out of character. And, with what we expect from playoff baseball and even from what we saw in the wild card game. He's taking it from all sides. I was on him. I feel like I wrote a carbon copy of that column last night, in response to game 4. I cannot believe he did it again. And I think this isn't just an indictment of Aaron Boone. It's an indictment of the whole coaching staff. They have a rookie bench coach in Josh Bard. Where's the bench coach to say, hey, let's not make this same mistake as last night? Where's the pitching coach, Larry Rothschild, to say, hey, let's get somebody else up, let's think, ahead just a little bit more?
Yeah.
2 nights in a row, Boone was caught flat-footed, and, that's the end of the season. But I don't think the Yankees can hold it against him, given that, they chose a rookie manager with no experience. You look across the dugout, and it's Alex Cora, who served as a bench coach for the Astros last year. That's a lot more experience.
Yeah, the thing that, look, I understand you say one thing in a news conference and it's different when the game starts, and you're right, the game does speed up on people. And I think that's what happened to Aaron Boone here. But look, it's not as if, and this, I guess in some ways this is the thing that I find kind of amusing about this. It's almost as if Aaron Boone, it's almost as if the book now is, okay, when you're in the playoffs, you see a guy start to wobble. And as you point out in your article today, I mean, there's a lot of evidence that when CC Sabathia wobbles, he wobbles, and there's a lot of evidence. Yeah. And he's gotten by a lot in his reputation, and, he's been a good workman and all that stuff. But he's not a guy, I don't think, at this stage of his career that gets the quote-unquote benefit of the doubt in this situation. Right. And that's what concerned me is you know, the book now is, hey, in a situation like that, go to the bullpen. Get fresh arm in there. Get somebody who can get you that out, and then we'll worry about managing the next inning. And it's almost like Aaron Boone kind of went against what the new book is, if you want to call it that.
I agree with you. I agree with you. And you know, I can see maybe there's about, you know, a small mitigating factor in game three where you're thinking not just for one game but for two games.
Sure, agreed.
You know, you've got to, but that said, I mean, really the maximum consequence is maybe burning one of your A-list pitchers early, like David Robertson or Chad Green, you know, who you need to come in and get a strikeout with men on base, because those are the guys who do that job. You know, that's not that big a sacrifice to make. I think that, you know, he should have done that. He should have, you know, look, we all love CC Sabathia. We all respect what he's done. He's a, you know, borderline Hall of Fame candidate. But, you know, at this stage of his career, he's got a big platoon split. He's got a very minimal ego when it comes to this stuff. You're not going to hurt CC's feelings by pulling him with one out in the third inning or two outs in the third inning. He knows the drill. He knows that this is essentially should be a bullpen game. And you have all of your A-list relievers except for Green rested, you know, and you've got an off day coming. Bullpen the hell out of this game, you know, and it's going to work. I mean, you might have to, patch something through. You might have to maybe call on a starter to throw an inning or something like that. But if that's what it takes, this is an elimination game. The kitchen is on fire. Do what you need to do to survive.
And conversely, we saw, you know, Alex Cora have one of those series, right, where, you know, you guy hits for cycle, sits the next game. You look at Luis Severino, and you've got some players who've got ugly numbers against him, but you decide, you know what? When some of those guys have come through for me. I mean, I'm going to go with a gut call. I'm going to roll the dice a bit. Just seemed as if almost everything, you know, other than starting David Price, almost everything worked for Alex Cora.
You know, it's not that there were no numbers that justify the choices of Holt and Devers the other night. You know, both of those guys are, you know, obviously left-handers. Mm-hmm. Severino is lesser against lefties than he is against righties. And both of them had very good numbers against high 90s stuff, you know, which is Severino's, you know, soup du jour. That was something I pointed out in my article. I mean, you know, they may not have done well against Severino himself, but they can hit a high fast, you know, the high velocity fastball. They're good against that stuff. And Cora went with that, and he looked very smart for doing it. And you know, his decisions paid off. And you know, I think that you know, we could go overboard lauding him, but you know, he looks very smart because of the way that those things paid off. He was able to nurse a lesser bullpen through, you know, through trouble. It would have been very easy for him to go back to Rick Porcello in the sixth inning last night.
Yep.
He didn't. He had seen enough. He had seen that Porcello had given up those two doubles, and he said, "All right, you know, let's go with a fresh pitcher, a fresh look, and we can bring Chris Sale out of the bullpen if we need to." And he did, and you know, that worked like a charm.
I wonder how much of that too. And I was thinking about this last night. How much of that came from his experience in the dugout with AJ Hinch last year? You know, AJ Hinch had to. Hey, he lost faith in his closer in the World Series, and you know he had to pull some things out of his you know what to get that World Series win. And I was thinking that watching Alex Cora, I got to think that he's sitting there thinking, "Man, I've seen this before." You know, that experience had to be invaluable there.
Yeah, no, we have seen many managers benefit from using their starting pitchers in relief on throw days. It's not just this current little, you know, revolution in pitcher usage. I mean, you go back to the 2003 playoff run. Jack McKeon doing that with the Marlins pitchers, I think, is the one that really stands out for me.
My goodness, what about Arizona against the Yankees? Look, the way they used Randy Johnson and Curt Schilling in that
series. Yeah, I mean, doing it in an elimination game, you know, in the deciding game, I mean, that's one thing. And we've seen, you know, the big unit do that in 1995 in the Mariners Game 5 of the Division Series. But, you know, I'm talking about routinely doing it, going for the jugular with it, and the Astros did that very well last year. They had, you know, McCullers, Morton, Peacock. Those guys were coming out of the bullpen, giving them long, like almost tandem start type stuff, the kind of stuff you see in A-ball, you know, where the second where a second starting pitcher gives you three or four innings out of the bullpen. But here, you know, yeah, it was obviously, I think Chris Sale, if he's healthy, I think is a better pitcher, you know, in a one-inning burst than just about anybody you can bring out of that bullpen besides Kimbrel, and maybe even better than Kimbrel, you know, based on the fact that 2018 model of Craig Kimbrel is not the same as 2016 or so. So, you know, it was smart, and I expect we'll see, you know, stuff like that again, health permitting.
We're in conversation with Jay Jaffe on the Jeff Blair Show. All right, the Red Sox go on to face the aforementioned Houston Astros. Do we feel better about Chris Sale after what we saw in the playoffs going into that series?
A bit better, yeah. I think a bit better. I mean, you know, it's still you'd still like to have him where he was in, you know, April through June rather than what we've seen, you know, in August and September and early October. We want to see a guy who's going, you know, seven innings and striking at 12. But, you know, the mandates of October baseball and the fact that these are such high-intensity encounters, if it's five innings or five-plus innings, that's, you know, that's still pretty darn good. You've got enough time to, you know, to build a lead, and you've got enough arms and enough off days that you can go back to, you know, your the best of your remaining pitchers to get through.
The other aspect of this series, you know, a lot of the focus was obviously on the managing and the bullpens, but if you look at the numbers with runners in scoring position, and I'm not always a fan of necessarily doing that, but I think in a series it can tell you a lot. You compare the Red Sox numbers, you compare the Red Sox approach with runners in scoring position to the Yankees. Does that same approach work against the Houston Astros, do you think? The same approach the Red Sox had?
Both of them are, you know, they're high-powered teams, a lot of home runs. What the Red Sox were able to do was consistently get strike one. You look back at Eovaldi and Porcello. They didn't walk a single hitter. Mm-hmm. They were getting first pitch strikes 75% of the time in their bats. 21 for 26 for Eovaldi, 15 for 19 for Porcello. If you could do that, if you could take the walks away from the Yankees, and if you could take the walks away from the Astros, you're going to be a lot better off. You know, I mean, that approach works. I think that throwing strikes is a must. I mean, you know, you can't nibble against the Astros, you know, because they're a patient team too, and they've got so many weapons. I don't know, you know, in terms of runners in scoring position, I tend to be a little bit nervous about putting too much stock in those because they're small samples, but you know, it does come down to, I think, good advanced scouting and good execution. And we know that the Astros have a top-notch staff and are second to none in preparation. And we saw that, you know, that's a big reason why they were able to make that World Series run last year. And I think that I expect them to be able to counter the Red Sox similarly, and likewise, I think the Red Sox are, you know, going in there with a game plan. It's not just flying by the seat of their pants.
You know, Jay, I think we looked at the playoffs, and I mean, there are a couple of free agents we focused on. You're one, obviously, Josh Donaldson, because he played for the Blue Jays with Cleveland. Manny Machado, he's in the playoffs. Bryce Harper isn't. Clayton Kershaw's in there. But I'm wondering, you know, two people who have had pretty good playoffs. One guy in particular, I mean, Yasmani Grandel's had a good playoff series, but also Nathan Eovaldi. How much has he helped his value since joining the Red Sox?
I think he's going to be highly sought. I mean, you know, this is a guy who was in his first season back from Tommy John surgery. He only threw 112 innings, or something on that order. But he was particularly good when he came back, when he came to the Red Sox. He really was able to handle the Yankees very well, both in the regular season and the postseason. And I think, yeah, his stock is way up. I mean, he's going to get, you know, probably a nice, you know, 4-year deal out of this, for sure. Getting the reputation for being a Yankee killer never hurts, especially when you're in the American League. So I do expect that he's going to get paid. Grandal, I think, is the best catcher on the market. I mean, you know, the people focus on the low batting average, but the pitch framing stuff, he's just, you know, one of the best in all of baseball. He could switch hit. He's got, you know, great power. Has had some injuries, but I think when you compare him to the top alternative on the market, Wilson Ramos, I think he's probably the more reliable guy in terms of staying healthy and probably the better defender.